Serhiy Plokhii is professor of Ukrainian history at Harvard University, the director of Harvard's Ukrainian Research Institute, and one of the foremost experts on Ukrainian history. As he explains in his new book, we must look back to Ukraine's past in order to understand its present and future. Situated between Europe, Russia, and the Asian East, Ukraine was shaped by the empires that have used it as a strategic gateway between East and West. Each invading army left a lasting mark on the landscape and on the population, making modern Ukraine an amalgam of competing cultures. The name of the new book is The Gates of Europe, A History of Ukraine, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Serhiy Plokhii to the program this morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're most welcome. It's a pleasure.
A great pleasure to have you on the program. Why did you want to take a look at such a broad history, and why do you feel that's necessary, especially now?
Well, I didn't plan to write this book. I have been teaching Ukrainian history here at Harvard for 8 years, but again, I thought that I would write a general history of Ukraine some time later in my career. But the developments in the region in the last year and a half really made me think and feel like I have to do that now. And it was important to look at the current crisis in the broadest possible historical perspective. And the look at the region in terms of relations between Europe and Eurasia, between the European civilizations and Eurasian steppes, looked like the right prism and the right way to interpret what is going on in the region, because it's much more than just a Russian-Ukrainian conflict. It has been often presented, rightly or wrongly, as a conflict between the Russian world and the traditional values that President Putin is now trying allegedly to defend, and what is called in Russia today as a decadent West. So that long-term perspective, long-term history of Ukraine looked like a right way to approach the crisis and its history and what led to it.
So the starting place for you, the historical roots of the current crisis, you begin where?
Well, I really begin with the Herodotus from all characters and writers, and I look at the lands north of the Black Sea as the first frontier of the Greek civilization and the first frontier of the cultural entity that would later become known as the West. And I claim that it was there in those Pontic steppes, not north of the Crimea, that the West started really to define itself and its others, its numerous others. So from that point of view, for a conflict that is portrayed very often as a conflict of the West and Eurasia, that looked like a right point to start.
Just the title, The Gates of Europe, that is a metaphor, but more to it than that.
Exactly. It is a metaphor, but Ukraine, since really, at least since Middle Ages, have been this country and region between Europe and Eurasian steppes. It is located at the western edge of those steppes. So starting with the Mongols in the 13th century, there was this movement of peoples and armies both eastward and westward, and most of them were passing through Ukraine, either going south of the Carpathian Mountains or north of the Carpathian Mountains. But it wasn't just a battleground. It wasn't just a place of conflict. It was also a place where the cultural interchange was taking place. We have the ideas of Renaissance, the Baroque culture first entering that part of the world through intermediary of Ukrainian cultural institutions, through the intermediary of Ukrainian churches. So again, Ukraine is a wonderful metaphor for a meeting place, not just a conflict zone. And again, the idea is that it shouldn't be conflict zone, I hope, for too long, and that it has great potential of serving as a bridge, as bringing together Eastern and Western Europe, so Russia and what is now known as European Union.
You write about this a great deal in the book, and I'm interested in your belief of what differentiates Ukrainians from Russians.
Well, there is a number of course markers, and one of them that starts with the nation builders of the 19th century. You talk about language and you talk about culture, but Ukraine is, and the difference from Russia is more than that, in a sense that if you look even today at Ukraine, it's a place of different languages and different cultures, and its ability for most of the part of its history of these different ethnic groups, and those would be Tatar and Polish and Ukrainian and Jewish, to Lithuanians as well, to live together and somehow find a common language and find the way coexist together. That's quite unique, by the standards of today's Eastern Europe. And again, we see in the situation of the current conflict, the mobilization of the Ukrainian society, it is happening across different linguistic and religious and cultural lines. So the political nation is being formed. And I was really very much interested in looking into the roots of that kind of nation, because very often we speak about conflicts. Ukraine served as one of the main killing fields of Holocaust. So we talk about that, but it was also interesting to see what is behind the current mobilization of the Ukrainian society, and that was this tradition of coexistence.
And with that, talk a little bit about Crimea and how the Crimea ended up as part of Ukraine.
What happened in 2014, the Russian annexation of the Crimea, this is second Russian annexation of the peninsula. The first one took place in 1783. And at that time, the Crimean Khanate was first a dependency of the Ottoman Empire and then an independent state. It became part of the Russian Empire and then part of the Soviet Union. That is the only part of today's Ukraine where Ukrainians don't constitute the majority, I mean ethnic Ukrainians. And the reason why it was transferred back in 1954 was that in terms of the economic development of the peninsula, very important were economic and other ties with mainland, which happened to be Ukrainian mainland. And as we now follow news with the trade blockade of the Crimea, with difficulties that they have now with supplies of energy, the economic ties, of course, were very close, and they continue to be close today. So it was kind of a rearrangement of the borders, redrawing borders between the republics within the Soviet Union, informed by the economic thinking that brought Crimea into Ukraine. But then, given this kind of openness of Ukrainian cultural situation, Crimea became part of Ukraine in 1991. The majority of not just population in Ukraine, there were 90% who voted for independence, but the majority of also population in the Crimea voted for Ukrainian independence. And it continued to be part of Ukraine until this annexation in March of 2014. There was no any kind of indigenous mobilization of the Russians in defense of any violations of their rights, because there was none of those violations. So it really happened as a result of annexation by a foreign power.
You write in the epilogue of the book that history has been used and abused more than once in the Ukraine crisis, informing and inspiring its participants, but also justifying violations of international law, human rights, and the right to life itself. How so?
Well, one of the examples is, of course, the situation with the Crimea. It happened in violation of a number of international agreements, including the Budapest Memorandum of 1994, when Russia and the United States and Britain gave assurances to Ukraine that despite the fact that Ukraine got rid of the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world, those powers would guarantee its sovereignty and indivisibility of its territory. So the international law was broken, and the rationale for Russian actions were provided exactly by pointing to history, Russian history of the region since 1783. So that was a historical argument that was used to somehow deal with the violation of international law and really breaking of international order. Then the next stage was the attempt to create a buffer state between Russia and Ukraine, which would include eastern and southern parts of Ukraine. The name for that state was proposed as New Russia, and that was going back to the traditions of, again, Russian imperial presence in the region, because in the late 18th century there was a province that was called New Russia. So there was a lot of reference to this imperial and partly Soviet time in the Russian propaganda during the conflict, during that crisis, and it unfortunately continues till today. So again, it's an example of misuse and abuse of history, as far as I'm concerned. So in a way, one of the reasons for me writing that book was that I was trying to put these facts in the right perspective and have them straight.
Where do you believe we are right now when it comes to the crisis? Because it seems to have incredible fragility.
Well, one thing is that there is growing sense that the Minsk agreement agreements, they don't work, because one of the ideas of Minsk agreements is that the Donbas would come back as a result of the new elections in that region, Donbas meaning eastern part of Ukraine. But according to those agreements, the elections would have to take place before the foreign troops leave the territory, which, of course, is difficult to imagine how that would happen, what the outcome of those elections would be. Even the ceasefire is very problematic. So many people are afraid that what will happen with Donbas is creation of another territory like Transnistria, let's say, another frozen conflict. And the kind of a conflict that can be ignited again when the foreign actors want this or need this, and in this particular case, Russia. So it's continuing instability on the eastern borders of European Union and NATO. So that's unfortunately seems to today as the most likely scenario. For now, we have much less in terms of the military action and activity. Russia is clearly very busy now in Syria, but it can change any day. So it's really depends very much on how people in Moscow, and in particular President Putin, define what is and what is not in interest of the regime.
Serhiy Pulkhy is professor of Ukrainian history at Harvard University, director of Harvard's Ukrainian Research Institute, and one of the foremost experts of Ukrainian history. His book is The Gates of Europe, A History of Ukraine. It is published by Basic Books. Serhiy Pulkhy, thank you so much for being with us. I greatly appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Gates of Europe, A History of Ukraine. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.